You're listening to the Pocket Coven podcast,
where we explore the magical and mystical
and where they intersect with the wide world of mental health.
I'm Amber Lenore, a pagan creative arts therapist.
And I'm Callie Little, a pagan emotional support witch and artist.
We invite you to listen, connect, and deepen your relationship to magic.
And to yourself.
We're the coven in your pocket. Hello and welcome to the Pocket Coven podcast. Look at me doing the intro this time.
Look at you go.
I'm a real grown-up now.
I am so excited about this week's topic because you said, let's do an episode on pleasure. And my first thought was, okay, we've already done a sex witch episode. So what does pleasure mean? And I want to start by asking you what like made this topic come up for you and what does pleasure mean to you?
That's a good question. I brought it up and texted you about it because I selfishly want to record about it. I am exploring that in my own life. And it's not like this is the first time I've considered embodied pleasure before, but I'm finding it very helpful right now. And also I felt like it would be a good palate cleanser after last week's episode. Mm. And we'll give information about how to live in a body like ours. What it means to me is that I can feel. Mm. And that's really why I want to talk about it. It's great to understand feelings. It's wonderful and important to intellectualize. It's necessary to have containers to put our symptoms in, ourselves in. And that's really different than feeling. And pleasure is a way that we can access emotion that helps us move through feelings, even hard feelings.
Yeah, I love that. It's the ability to feel. And maybe with the caveat, it's the ability to feel in a positive way or even neutral.
Yeah. In an embodied way, which to me means that all the feelings are present. I had to teach my body how to feel and be guided into how to feel my feet on the floor. I spent so many years, I would walk through a forest and not feel shit because I was in my head.
Yeah. I remember in, you know, ye old days of Tumblr, seeing everybody write about, I'm dissociated. This is what dissociation feels like. It was kind of when that word became popular. And I was like, why is everybody talking about this feeling that is just constant? Like, why are we acting like it's special? This is what it feels like to be a person. And it took me years to realize that that's not true, Callie. You're just mentally ill.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah, I didn't realize I was chronically dissociated for so long because, you know, well, I like sex and I enjoy eating food, those like extremely high sensation activities that are also actually like, yes, they're embodying. They can also be dissociative. It just took so long to learn that there's a process to feeling embodied. And, you know, we talked on that a little bit last week when we were discussing, you know, the challenge of being in a traumatized body, a traumatized nervous system, and how activating our body, raising our heart rate, that can be really triggering and can lead to panic, dissociation, all kinds of stuff. It's the same thing with breathing activities, you know, anything that is embodying and grounding. If your body has been an unsafe place to be, it can be really hard to access and it can be really upsetting to access.
It can be activating to even try to access because it feels like you're putting your defenses down because you are. Putting your defenses down. Yes.
Right.
It's scary to receive pleasure.
And how exhausting is it to wear a big ass suit of armor all day, every day? You know, there's this analogy that I use with my clients, which is like, yeah, maybe the discomfort you're carrying in a relationship or a situation, maybe it's not huge, but have you ever held a newborn baby? They're like 7 to 9 pounds, right? They don't weigh very much, but eventually your arms get tired from holding even that small amount of weight. They get tired from being careful and carrying things. They get tired because the weight almost compounds over time. You know, gravity pulls us down too. And carrying even a small amount of stress or even being dissociated some of the time, it does wear on us over time. So it's so important that we're supplementing that, because it's gonna happen. That's like part of everyday life. We're supplementing that with grounding and with taking that armor off when it's safe. Like, you're not gonna take your armor off on a battlefield, because that would be really stupid. But when you're home and you're like eating dinner, maybe that's a good time to let your shield sit down, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I like what you're saying about practicing taking the shield off in moments that feel accessible. Maybe not when you're in the midst of a panic attack. Like, I wish that we could reach for every resource when we're there, but we often can't. So especially when we're learning how to regulate, we need to do that when we're regulated mm-hmm. a little bit, or we might need to practice that. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about how pleasure looks like so many things. Mm-hmm. I feel pleasure in my body as soft and communicative and relational. It's more sensual, because mm-hmm. pleasure to me is coded as like sex, or fucking coming, you know, which like I like to come. That's great. I love the sensuality of sex. It's fantastic. But there's an entire sensuous world, the cut of the leaves and how jagged they look in one place and then furry in another, or the way rocks look vibrant when they're wet, or the way that rabbits hop and dart around in a field, or, you know, there's just so many, mm-hmm. I could just go on. And when there was more danger in my life, I wasn't attuning to those things because I actually couldn't.
Yeah.
And I didn't have practice doing that. And now I do. So I can reach for it a lot more easily. And I keep increasing my ability by practicing. What does this tree feel like? Oh, it feels really rough right here. But if I press my body against it, oh, it feels like it's kind of holding me. Oh, that feels nice. Whereas when I was, you know, maybe 25, I would have been like, oh, that's a tree. Anyway, mm-hmm. about my boyfriend, which is fine. You know, I don't want to judge her. Like, I don't want to judge her. Like, I love her and I love myself, or I try to when I am her, because sometimes she comes back in, I can't feel shit. And mm-hmm. I'm just all internally stimulated, but I digress.
Pleasure. Yeah, I mean, physical pleasure and physical awareness, because that's also what we're talking about. They're half of the equation. And then there's that other inner half, which I don't know, could be emotional or spiritual. I think it's a mix of everything, really. But I feel so much, I'm going to say energetic, because that kind of encompasses all of it. I feel so much energetic pleasure from tending my altar. It feels so deliciously activating. Like, I feel that part of me is able to come forward when I'm lighting that incense. You know, that's always my go-to first step. For some reason, incense feels really accessible to me, because I know if that's all I can do because of my low executive function, then I've done it. And now my house smells a little bit nicer, you know? And if I can do more than that, it's a really good gateway into that. That is such a drop into my practice kind of key. It's like putting it in the ignition, you know? And I think so much about our practices as the witches that we are is about paying attention to nature and the world and ourselves and our community, because we can't have magic without all of those things. We are part of the collective. We are very important ingredients, because we are the ingredients that we can actually manipulate and control, you know, or at least have the most impact on. And nature has such a profound effect on human beings, on the planet. So the minute that I light that incense, it's like I'm starting that process of getting in touch with all those things, because maybe I'm thinking about what color of candle I want to light, which is related to the season. And that's going to make me think, what herbs should I be putting in my tea today? Because it's cold outside, so I want to be using some warming herbs. So I should probably use some ginger. And you know what? My stomach has been pretty upset lately. Maybe I should also add in some peppermint. And it just gets the ball rolling. But all of these things are kind of leading up to what I was telling you about with the heart of this episode. I want to think about our bodies, our delicious, sensual, pleasurable, often painful bodies as cauldrons, because they really do hold everything for us. And all of the pieces of our lives, the people that we spend time with, the things that we do with our time, the food that we're eating, and I say that without shame, it's just something to notice. All of the things we spend our time on are ingredients in that cauldron. And when we are thinking about like, oh, my stomach's hurting, maybe I should have some ginger tea, we're talking about creating a potion. That's what that is. And when we deal with chronic depression, which I'm pretty sure everybody deals with depression, maybe not clinical depression, maybe not every single day, but like you said in our last episode, it's the common cold of the brain.
It is. It's rampant, and it's information. It's there for a really good reason. It's doing something important. It's usually there because the anxiety is so high that the nervous system just poops out and the depression comes in. Or, you know, maybe we learned when things were dangerous when we were young, we can just, you know, it would be helpful to collapse. And we can do that collapse thing in our bodies. And that's all very reasonable and something that I think we need to hold as traumatized people, if it's true, is that we're not unsafe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that that's the first step mentally in making some sort of step forward when we're feeling that depression, right? Is noticing it and saying, okay, this is information. Maybe this is information tied to my past, and that's being echoed right now in the present. But before I move on to kind of explain what I'm getting at, Amber, what is depression on like a scientific level?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's difficult to explain because there isn't one particular way that people get depressed. Depression looks different on everyone, but there are some commonalities. I mean, generally, you're looking at that really sad mood, the loss of energy, trouble sleeping, your appetite is different, you feel worthless or guilty, you have a difficult time concentrating. I mean, people can get suicidal when they're depressed, and there's different risk factors for depression, like your genetics and environmental factors. Big life events are massive triggers for depression. And I'm talking about major depression, which is somewhat different than depressive episodes, but you can do some research on that. And, you know, we also talked a bit about depressiveness and depressive episodes in the last episode, because trauma is, of course, another risk factor for adult depression. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that there's a lot of different reasons, but they're generally situational, or there is, for lack of better words, a chemical imbalance. Your brain is not making the serotonin it needs to make, but your brain releases chemicals when you do stuff. And so that's part of why depression builds, is because you just kind of freeze, then you're not doing stuff, then the brain's not getting its good juices, right? And now, oh, now it's looping back, and now I really don't want to do anything. It's like right. The Ouroboros. He eat he own ass, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Not clinical, but I tried.
The Ouroboros of depression.
Yes.
We need a t-shirt. Yeah, I love that you're talking about how, you know, depression is multifaceted. Like, there's not just one layer to it. Yes, there's a chemical imbalance, but that chemical imbalance is a result of something, right? And whether that's a physical predisposition or a lifestyle influenced disposition, you know, there are so many ways that it can be impacted, but our lives really add up to that. And like you said, we can get in that loop of just not accessing those chemicals because we get depressed and we just stop doing the damn thing.
Exactly. And I think it's so important here to really like identify that there's nuance here. Yes, there are things you're not doing, and yes, that's probably exacerbating your depression. That's true. That can very easily feel like, oh, this is my fault. I'm doing something mm-hmm. wrong. So I want to just use myself as an example. My mom died, so very understandably, I started doing things like wearing pajamas every day, letting everyone help me and do things for me, which was important because I wasn't very functional. Avoiding things that are activating and triggering to me.
Which also makes sense.
Right, which makes perfect sense. And then after about 3 months of that, my nervous system was just depressed.
Right.
Naturally, because I wasn't doing the things that non-depressed Amber does. And so it was actually helpful for there to be depression there because it helped my nervous system gather itself and calm down. And then I started to notice when that wasn't working anymore. And then it was time to sort of mobilize. So, yeah, I just wanted to give that caveat that it looks different for everyone and it's there for a good reason. But you do need to do something. It's true.
I feel slightly cheesy at how moved I feel by you identifying depression as a helper. Because it's an inherent part of all of us, that shutdown. And it's so deeply hated. All of us really villainize depression and think of it as this thing, like, why is my brain... I've heard so many people say, like, why is my brain being such a fucking asshole, you know?
Totally, and I feel that too. I actually hate myself when I'm depressed. It's my least favorite version. So I'm glad that you're connecting with that because I'm trying to embody that because she... Like, oh, I feel emotional saying it, but it's true. She really just wants me to feel comfortable. She does. She's not, you know, like she doesn't want me to feel scared. She wants to take care of me. She's trying her very best. And she was so fucking helpful for a time. But now she's kind of tired and there's others that can come in here. I stood in front of my house. I was taking out the trash and I said out loud, which one of y'all bitch is going to come in here and take care of me? Because she's tired. Like, who's it gonna be? Who's it gonna be? There's other people here. Someone needs to come forward. And she did. And she's totally helping.
I love that. I love that compassion for the parts of ourselves that they really are trying so hard. We are always trying so hard to just manage. And I, of course, hate when I feel like shit. Nobody enjoys feeling like shit, even if we pathologically maybe are drawn to it because of patterns. Nobody wants to feel bad. And so when that part of us shows up, it's just so easy to say like, oh, fuck you. I hate you. But that part of us that's showing up is saying, hey, I love you. Please, please just be safe. Please just cocoon yourself and don't let anything else make us feel bad. And what an awful thing that we always meet that tender being with, fuck you. I hate you. You're so worthless. How cruel is that to this very tender part of ourselves?
It is helpful to remember that it is a tender part of ourselves. It might not feel that way. You might feel horrible shame when you're in depression. You may not feel like a tender and yielding being who is just wanting to be loved. I feel like a horrible bitch when I am depressed. And it's so difficult to see myself as someone who is tender.
And also that's the work of it. And if you don't want your depressed self taking care of your needs, well, then you may need to call someone else in to take care of you. Now that we've identified, you know, what depression is, it's a result of life and a result of chemicals. So we're going to be talking about the chemical aspect. That is not to say that you should ignore the life aspect, because you can't. That is just an additional part of this spell that we're going to be talking about. So I want you to think of your happy chemicals, all your hormones, as being ingredients in your potion, right? So if you're the cauldron, what do you need to feel happy? You need dopamine. That's the reward chemical of the brain. You need oxytocin, the love hormone. You need serotonin, which is your mood stabilizer. And you need endorphins, which are, you know, happiness and pain relief. You need all four of those to feel good. And when we're depressed, our brain's just not producing all of that for a multitude of reasons, including what we're doing, what we're not doing, and that it just is like, fuck you, I'm not working right now. So how do you kickstart those things? My suggestion is you think of this potion that you're making to feel better as pulling one of each of those chemicals in. So one activity per chemical. So I'm going to go through some lists of how to access all four of these chemicals, and then we're going to talk about how you can access all of them through performing those activities. Are you ready, Amber?
I'm so excited. I love lists, and I love things to be concrete. I love a recipe.
Same.
Lay it on me.
All right. So we're going to start with dopamine, which is my favorite as an ADHD bitch. Of course I love dopamine, because it's like, it's that adrenaline rush of like, fuck yes, I'm doing the damn thing. And one of the easiest ways to access it is to complete any task. Write down a to-do list and check some shit off. I always start my to-do lists with things I've already done in the day. Brush my teeth, already did that. Hell yeah.
Nice.
I am already succeeding. And it sounds so stupid and cheesy, but like, whatever, it works for me. And when I have a whole list that I have finished, ooh, it feels so good. And that's not to say that sometimes I don't move things to another day, because I do. Do I hate it a little bit? Yes. But completing every single one of those tasks is a tiny boost of dopamine. Other ways you can access dopamine are any self-care activity. You know, you're going to feel that sense of reward from, you know, finally clipping your nails. I put off clipping my nails all the time, which is very bad as a gay.
Scratchy.
I need my sharps to not be sharp. So anything from, you know, hygiene to cooking a meal for yourself to, you know, getting yourself a treat, sure. But just remember that self-care is also balancing your checkbook. It's also cleaning your closet. It can be so many things. So anything that's going to take care of you in your life is going to access even the smallest bit of dopamine. Other good things are eating good food. And by good, I mean either something that is nutritious, or something that tastes good, or something that feels good. It doesn't have to be about judgment of that food. I don't want to involve judgment in this list. I just want you to say, ooh, I'm going to feel so good when I eat that.
And be honest with yourself about when you're feeling good. Because I know, like, for me, eating an entire bag of Doritos, I don't feel very good, actually. But a bowl, yes. And that's not about restricting. It's just like, how much fucking MSG can my body handle? A family size bag of Doritos? Probably not. Like, actually respecting how my body is really feeling, which I think is like a health at every size concept. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about indulging in what feels truly good. For those of us with naturally low dopamine, it can be really easy to overdo things like that and get ourselves sick. Which again, this is not about shame. It's just like, I God, recently I ate like a whole bag of veggie straws. I fucking love veggie straws. They're so good.
Ooh, yeah. You can suck hummus through them.
That's so gross.
Thank you.
I love hummus. Wow. But after I ate this entire bag of delicious, salty, oily, fried veggies, I felt like shit. Like my stomach was not happy with me. And I was like, God damn it. I could have enjoyed those veggie chips in like at least two sittings instead of one. And instead I just feel gross. Like my tummy is gurgling. So yes, be honest with yourself about what feels good. And I would say, you know, if what you're hearing is eat a salad, because then you'll feel like you're a good human being, you know, dig into that, do some journaling on that, talk to a therapist about that, because if you're eating a salad, fantastic, it's full of vitamins, good for you. But if you're eating a salad because you feel like you'll be a bad person if you don't, that's not feeling good.
Exactly. No, what I'm saying is, you know, when you're craving chocolate and what you really want is a Toblerone. Right? But you don't have a fucking Toblerone. So you find those little nasty, shitty, like Christmas chocolates that don't taste actually good. They're like from the Bartels and they came in an advent calendar someone gave you or whatever. You know, they're hard and blech, they don't taste good, mm-hmm. but you eat it anyway. And you're like, I feel bad. I want to help you avoid that. I want you to go get the Toblerone. That's uh-huh. what I'm saying. Go store and get a Toblerone. Like give yourself really what you want.
Yes. I love that. So some other ways to access dopamine are celebrating any win, big or small. So yes, celebrate that piece of art you sold or that raise that you got at work, or even just that you talked to your boss about something and you were nervous and it went well. Celebrate that. Celebrate the fact that you cleaned the toilet, because that sucks. If what it takes for you to feel good about something is that you say to your best friend, your partner, a roommate, hey, I just did this thing. And they go, oh my God, awesome. Do it. Get the little win. Like access that dopamine. Don't hold back because you think it's so embarrassing to notice when you do something. You are allowed to notice yourself and you're allowed to want attention because we all do. Other things are gratitude lists, kind of working off that same idea. Like celebrate yourself, celebrate your life. Notice what makes you happy, because that is a snowball. When you notice all the people that love you in your life and you write that down, you're cementing that idea in your head. And what happens when we have ideas about truths in our lives? We look for confirmation bias, right? So that means that today, if I'm noticing, wow, my friendship with Amber is so special, I'm so proud of everything we do together, tomorrow I'm going to notice what we do together again, and that's going to re-cement that. It's going to snowball into a larger piece of gratitude, and the bigger that gratitude gets, the more dopamine it releases. Also, listening to music, we all know how cathartic that can be. Remember not to only listen to your sad bitch music if you're like me and you can just get real moody. Put on some happy shit because it genuinely affects your mood.
Also, I feel like sometimes I just need to cry to Fiona Apple and then listen to Outkast, you know, as a process. Just like move through it, but use the music to help me process.
And love that.
Yeah, get the feeling through.
That's some alchemy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. The last thing on my dopamine list is sleep. You do need enough sleep in order to release dopamine. So if you struggle with sleep, of course, be addressing that. You know, my recommendation as a non-herbalist and not at all a doctor and somebody with 0 degrees is I really do recommend drinking some chamomile tea in the evening. I found that when I was experiencing chronic nightmares, like hyper vivid nightmares, that drinking a cup of chamomile tea or multiple cups in the evening really helped me access better sleep and also have better dreams. Other things that can affect that are, you know, reducing the light in your room, sleeping under a weighted blanket can help you access REM cycles more easily. I like to sleep with a sleep mask on my face. It feels really good. And keeping the room a bit cooler, that can help reduce anxiety, nightmares, and it can help you get deeper sleep.
Yeah. have white noise if that feels good to you. I always sleep with white noise, weighted blanket, cool room, like a meat locker.
My sister-in-law is in her 40s and her entire life has never been able to sleep without a fan blowing in her room.
Oh yeah. Got to have a fan on. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're going to move on to the fun one that everybody talks about, oxytocin. I remember hearing about oxytocin, especially during my birth doula training, because oxytocin is so big with new parents, especially if they are breastfeeding. You know, you release oxytocin during birth, you release it during breastfeeding, during skin-to-skin contact. So what can we learn from that? Well, oxytocin is involved in kind of like high-stakes physical experiences with another person. Also, you can access oxytocin from skin-to-skin contact. Oxytocin is about our relationships with other people. So other ways to access it are eye contact, holding hands, hugging. And there's actually a suggestion, I believe that it's
10 hugs, 30 seconds a day, but 10 of them. So
that's a lot.
It's a lot. And it also acknowledging many of us are not getting hugged right now.
Right. So that is another thing that I want to talk about in this list is some of/many of the suggestions for oxytocin are easy to do with another person. And there are fewer options for that when it's just one of us, you know, but hugging is accessing that deep touch, right? So even if we can't have that in quarantine or because of our life circumstances, what we can have is a weighted blanket, and we can have deep, meaningful conversations with people we love. You know, it doesn't have to be that we're alone or we're not receiving that important kind of touch. I understand that using a weighted blanket and having a conversation over FaceTime is not at all the same thing as being hugged and being close to somebody that either loves you or is in love with you. And we're not saying this is going to fix that sense of loss or loneliness or desire. What we're saying is this is how you can manipulate this chemical in your brain. It's not going to be the biggest dose of it in the world, but it is going to be a small supplement, and that's what the aim is. It's to reduce that pain and to add in a little bit of that chemical, because it will compound over time. So other things that can access oxytocin are playing with or petting, you know, one of your pets, a cat or a dog, or playing with a baby or a child. Those are all things that really quickly access oxytocin for us, as long as they're not, you know, high stress. So if you're afraid of dogs, don't go try to cuddle a dog thinking it's going to access oxytocin, you know, aim for cats instead. Or even looking at videos of cute animals can release oxytocin. So if you don't have any babies or dogs in your life, you can just look up some cute animal videos. And I actually recommend that a lot to my clients who are very depressive, to just watch a few cute animals a day.
Yeah. I like that you added in the watching, because I was feeling like it's so important also to visualize. I went through this whole phase in my life where I couldn't fall asleep unless I was visualizing having sex. I had to access something that just, I think it was just releasing oxytocin and helping me calm down and giving my energy a place to focus and tell the story. And then by the time we got our clothes off in the fantasy, I'd be asleep, right? So
I love that. That's fascinating and like makes perfect sense. I remember being a kid and oh my God, I was such a romantic kid. I would be in bed just imagining what it would be like to someday hold hands with somebody.
Oh, yeah, same. Wow, yeah.
Imagine my chubby little baby hands.
Imagine being loved. Yeah, it's very dark when you think about it.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it is.
Ooh, laughing off that trigger. Ooh, here we go.
It's so absurd, you know. It is. Trauma. Being alive. So strange. So oxytocin, though. the last couple of things on this list are boom, boom, boom. Mm, you can give compliments to people. So this is one of my favorite tips at all. It is very autistic of me. When I was a kid, I was terrified of socializing. So easy to figure out now why. How I taught myself to not be painfully shy was I was like, ooh, people love compliments. And nobody gives out compliments, like, unless they're flirting, which, by the way, ooh, that shit is quicksand. So, you know, be prepared. If you compliment somebody on their shoes, for some reason, I will say many people are like, oh, you want to date me? No, I'm just noticing that you have good taste in shoes. But complimenting folks, my rule is it has to be genuine. But, you know, as that shy kid, I made myself compliment 3 people a day. And the rule was it couldn't be a lie. I had to genuinely look for stuff I liked in people. And what does that do? Trains me to look for things I like in people. So as an adult, like, you have said so many times that my love language is hyping my loved ones.
Yeah, you gas me up every chance you get, and I love it. And I'm like, yes. If I want to celebrate something, I text Callie, and Callie's like, I'm so proud of you. And now we both do that for each other. Like, yes. Yeah, bitch, you got this. You're doing it. Fire emojis.
Yeah, because it feels fucking good, and it makes you bonded to people. And it not only feels good to get those compliments, it feels good to give them because you see another person light up. So that is a really easy way to access oxytocin. And if it sounds a little scary, that's fine. Try it, and you will be surprised at how effective and actually easy it is.
Yeah, I am resonating with this along with something that I learned from my clinical supervisor this week. Therapists, over time, according to research, their attachment style will change. So most therapists are deeply wounded people, in case mm-hmm. you did not know that. Most of us have, like, disorganized attachment, where we come from trauma backgrounds. And studies have shown that therapists actually identify themselves as securely attached after a couple decades of their work, which is really great to hear, because generally we hear about how our work breaks us down and makes us mentally ill, and we, you know, start drinking and, you know, go off the deep end because, you know, trauma work is so difficult. And that's true. And I think that as our field has changed to be more relationship-based, and at least in my part of the therapy world, it's really creative and visual and textural, and we also really want to build up our clients and help them move into a healthy and regulated space, right? So I'll give them compliments, or I'll notice how great they are. Wow, you've mastered that skill. I'm so proud of you. Celebrate their successes with them. It's not my therapy, and I leave therapy sessions with my clients generally more regulated than when I came in. And so that helps me understand, as you're talking about, how there's this build in just even complimenting people, and it starts to work on your attachment patterning. I was just sort of integrating all of these loose ends from my week as you were saying that.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you notice that you often leave your sessions with your clients more stable than you came in. I cannot say how many times I've been having a really stressful morning, or I've just had a really difficult conversation, and I'm like, well, fuck, I have a client now. And I go and I sit down for the session, and I'm like, thank God I get to think about somebody else's shit for an hour. And I leave and I'm just like, life is so much easier. Taking that microscope off myself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's the distance from our problems, which is a relief. I'm like, no, I don't want to think about my problems right now. I promise you. Let's talk about you. You know, that mm-hmm. feels good. And also, there are weeks where I am not engaged on that level. Maybe I'm more anxious, so I'll be way more cognitive and analytical and way more psychodynamic, which I'm generally a pretty psychodynamic therapist. But when I am pausing and feeling and inviting them to tell me how they feel as if they were a natural environment, or we're pulling cards together, or maybe I give them a drawing activity. I feel so good actually when I do that, because I'm getting some of my attachment needs met in that moment. But anyway, this is a whole diatribe as self as helper things. Yeah. You know?
I mean, listen, this isn't just a listicle. It's also our delicious hour of self-indulgence.
You're right. You're right. We are having pleasure right now.
Exactly. Last two things on this oxytocin list are volunteering. Just give some time of yours to the collective. That will access that sense of compassion and connectedness, which is what oxytocin is all about. And sharing a meal with a loved one. I would suggest, if you're in deep isolation and you're not around anybody you love, you're totally solo right now, I would suggest that you and a friend, you know, order food, or you make food together over FaceTime, and then sit down and have dinner on FaceTime together. Maybe you make the same recipe, or you order from the same restaurant or something, but share the experience and focus on the connection rather than, oh, I wish that this was in person. You know, when that's the focus, like what is lacking, that's what we're feeling. And I'm not saying don't feel that. Of course you're going to feel that. I'm saying just shift the focus. You can notice things and also practice the exercise of appreciation for what is.
It feels good to help others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to be with others. Mm-hmm. All right. Serotonin. This is for you, my anxiety babies. Those of us on SSRIs are serotonin selective reuptake inhibitors.
Nice job getting that out. Shit. I don't even try.
Oh, yeah. I'm a professional amateur. It's truly my actual job title. So serotonin is your mood stabilization. This is going to be affected by anything that can, you know, stimulate that vagus nerve, right? So meditation, yoga, prayer. Those are some really simple ones, especially that prayer one, you know, any altar work that you're doing, any journaling practices you're doing, that is boosting your serotonin. Even one little speck of serotonin is more than the last second, right? So those activities might take a lot of effort to initiate, but again, they snowball. The harder things here are like, you know, running, exercise in general, cycling, swimming, but there are also some other, you know, low effort or lower effort activities like getting sunlight on your skin. That's going to also increase your vitamin D, which I recommend anybody who's experiencing depression, you know, talk to your doctor, but get on to some vitamin D supplements. I find that vitamin D and B12, especially as somebody whose diet is predominantly plant-based, those two things make it possible for my SSRIs to work. And take some nature walks. We talked in our last episode about how, you know, even walking can be difficult. So if you haven't listened to that one, give it a listen. I think walking is a medium emotional and energetic effort activity, depending on your trauma. If that feels inaccessible, another thing that can really impact your serotonin levels are deep breathing exercises. So, you know, if meditation is not your thing because your mind just wanders, try some mindfulness meditation that's focused on breathing. So all you're focusing on, and just you continue to remind yourself of whenever you have your mind wander, is what it feels like to breathe. And that is, I mean, it's sensual. It's literally very stabilizing for your body. It's good for you. And it's something you can do without raising your heart rate if you don't want to. You can also manipulate your heart rate if you'd like to. And you can do it from the safety of your bed.
As you're talking, I'm trying to put these four neurotransmitters into a tarot structure. I'm trying to do the correspondences. I'm like, okay, oxytocin, fire, relationship. Mm-hmm. What do I think dopamine is?
Oh, dopamine, the reward chemical, pentacles.
Pentacles. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Our air. So would it be serotonin or endorphins? I think, well, okay, what does that leave? That leaves water. Mm-hmm. So we've got mood stabilization and pain relief. I would say cups would be serotonin.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. So swords would be endorphins, our last of our four delicious hormones.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. All right. I like this. I like the tarot theme.
Thank you.
So for endorphins, how do we access those? I personally, sometimes my brain is like, okay, all hormones are endorphins. No, it's not true. We hear a lot of like exercise releases endorphins. First of all, that's too simplified. Secondly, exercise is one way to access endorphins. Movement in general accesses endorphins, but it's not the only way. And if you're a traumatized individual, you're not going to release endorphins for movement. You're going to release stress hormones. So let's think about how to do this for our bodies. Ways we can access endorphins are easiest, dark chocolate. It is a food that increases your endorphins. If you don't like dark chocolate, I'm sure cacao in general has an endorphin level in it. I'm not a scientist, but I feel like Google has a quick answer that I am not asking right now. Other ways you could access endorphins are laughter. For me, when I'm super depressed, I will often put on like a comedy special, which is very tricky if you're trying to go for non-offensive comedy. But in general, I have found that a lot of queer comics and a lot of female comics, not all on either account, tend to be non-offensive. Obviously, this is hit and miss, but looking up some comedians that you love, I love Mae Martin, Cameron Esposito, Nicole Byer, Tig Notaro. Oh, that's probably, she's my favorite. She's so fucking funny.
I like to watch kids cooking shows, and when they fail, I laugh. Is that offensive? Sorry, I'm a Sagittarius.
Amber's the Wicked Witch.
Sometimes, yeah.
The fire sign. Some other ways you can access endorphins are dancing. That can be with others or by yourself. You know, think of those Grey's Anatomy dance party scenes. But I will say, avoid alcohol if you are having any lack of these happy hormones, because alcohol, we use it to sterilize things. We use it to sterilize skin, right? Drinking something that will sterilize your gut bacteria actually inhibits your production of serotonin. If you want to learn more about that, there's a book that I have not read, to be clear, but a partner of mine has read, and I think it's called the like Quit Like a Woman or something. And my partner's non-binary and was like, I just imagine that every time she talks about being a woman, she's talking about being a person. But she explains why alcohol actually is very bad for mental illness. And I will say, as somebody who reserves my like glass of champagne to about once or twice a year, wow, not drinking even, you know, a glass of wine with dinner, which is what I was drinking, it's made me notice how horrifically depressed I get even having one drink. For a week, my mood is just shot. So be really careful about what you're putting in your body. And remember that dancing doesn't have to be paired with alcohol. Other things that you can do are use some vanilla and or lavender essential oils. Those are scents that are known to produce endorphins. And acupuncture. Personally, right now, I'm not trying to go out into the world too often. So I got myself an acupressure mat, which you just lay on. It's very painful, but it's safe and you can get them on Amazon or wherever you buy things for like 20 or 30 bucks. And it creates a lot of blood flow. And when you're done and you come off of it because it's unpleasant, you do get a little bit of that endorphin rush, kind of similar to after a tattoo.
I like that. I like the spiky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very warming. So if you find that when you're depressive, your body gets cold or you don't have good circulation, that's a really good one for that. But there is, I can only find this one. There is one thing you can do that releases all four of these chemicals at once. Do you know what it is?
What?
It's sex.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. So sex, it releases dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins. And if you're thinking, but I don't have anybody to have sex with, excuse me, you have yourself.
So same cocktail with masturbation?
Yes. You, nice. If you just want the easiest way to access all four of these chemicals, get down, you know, I would recommend making a ritual out of it. Like massage yourself with some delicious smelling and feeling oil, make it special, like light some candles, make an atmosphere. And also if you live with a partner in a studio basement apartment, like I do, then keep a vibrator in your shower. Any kind of sexual pleasure that you can achieve, if that's with a partner, if that's by yourself, whether or not it involves an orgasm, if you are stimulating your sexual organs and that's pleasant for you, you can knock out all four of these at once. So, I mean, how efficient is that?
Extremely efficient.
And what is sex if not about efficiency, right?
Agreed.
I sent the Virgo over here.
That's the most Virgo shit you've ever said to me.
Sex is about whatever the fuck you want it to be about. But also for our asexual listeners, because I know we do have them, because there are a lot more asexual people out in the world than we often acknowledge, you don't have to enjoy sex to access all four of these things. That's just one, you know, little hack to get all four of them. But you can also, you know, make a gratitude list and watch a cute animal video, do some deep breathing exercises while you burn some vanilla and lavender essential oil. That's going to do the same shit. So it's just about figuring out what works for you. So if you're thinking, but I hate movement practices and that's too stressful, great, don't do that. You know, maybe you're not ready for that. Stretching that comfort zone is obviously a necessity for those of us who live with trauma. But maybe that's not what you need when you're severely depressed. Maybe you need to operate in your comfort zone to get started, and that's okay. You get to honor where you're at. So think about on this list, what makes sense for you, and make your delicious self-care potion out of those ingredients, because, you know, we all have allergies.
Yes, and you're going to need to change your potion up probably all the time. Mm-hmm. There's such a temptation to make a plan and make a structure, and I'm going to follow it because I'm going to be consistent. And that's, sure, make a plan, make a structure, see if it can flex. Callie just gave us an entire list of different ways to access yourself. It doesn't mean that you have to put down your spiky mat, and every day at 9 a.m. you make sure you touch your spiky mat. You can assess and check in with the shape that you are today. The shape that I am today wants to play with this little moss ball. Look at this, Callie. It's just a little ball of moss.
Beautiful.
And thank you. And she wants lavender on her hands instead of maybe the other oil I used yesterday. And, you know, I'm like paying attention and asking, what do you need right now based on the shape you are? Oh, that doesn't really make sense all the time. Sure, but play with the moss ball. It's low stakes. Who cares? You know, it feels really nice right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I am going to make this into a document that will be on our Patreon at all tiers. This is going to be one of the, like, you sign up for the lowest tier, whatever, it's available. So what I would recommend doing with this tool, you know, if you have been taking notes or you're going to download that document, whatever, is either create a list and you can refer to it and say, okay, I'm going to do these four things. Or if you're feeling particularly low on the relationship level, you know, you can look at the oxytocin stuff. Or what might work for some people, I love a prop. I love a tool, like a physical tool. So I might recommend making a little series of like slips of paper or popsicle sticks that you write all these down on. And then you can pick out of like four different piles or jars or whatever. And that can be your cocktail for that day. I recommend as a counselor and coach that you are doing at least one of these activities every day. It's a big ass list, right? I usually recommend for my most depressive clients, if they are people who feel good about sexual touch, to masturbate daily and to consider it a vitamin. It doesn't have to lead anywhere. It doesn't have to be for very long. But if sexuality is accessible to you and you are very depressed, I want you to try to masturbate every day.
That's very top energy. I found like, okay, mommy, fine. Mommy cousin.
Right, come more. Mommy cousin. Wow, that is some, you're really touching our white trash roots there.
Thank you. I'm really proud. I also like Velveeta, so we can, you know, talk about that white
Listen,
trash stuff.
A brick of Velveeta with a can of Hormel chili, and that's a chip dip.
Bitch, I'm going to make that for dinner. Oh, that sounds really good. Oh my God. Yeah. It's felt so good to talk about the things that feel good. And, you know, I also just want to hold space always because I think that the dark shit is the highest form of light work. That's actually why I like the dark shit is because how loving, how deeply loving it is to turn to the side of yourself that's like, I can never feel pleasure again and say that you're there for them. So you might not be in a cycle right now where any of this hits at all. Just wait. Just maybe come back to it at another time and maybe you feel some of that frost kind of shaking off. Maybe it's just not the right thing right now.
Yeah.
There are other things that will feel better to you. Mm-hmm. And this is also about self-trust.
Yes.
I've never really been one to follow what a book tells me. I love to learn, but I usually have to come up with my own way of doing things. And then I really have buy-in. And I find that really empowering that I can take all the information and metabolize it and then turn to myself and say, what do you need right now?
Mm-hmm. I have to understand why something will work before I will buy into it. So when my therapist says something like, what I want you to do is put an ice pack on your feet, I'm like, okay, I will, but you have to tell me why.
Totally. I could feel that voice in me when we were, you know, talking about the different things. I could feel a former version of myself that would say something like, why? Like, what the fuck? Like, oh, go take a hot shower. Like, that's going to solve everything. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, stop trying to fix me. Fuck off. Right. and it's different to turn to that side of yourself and say, hey, I wonder if a hot shower might feel good to you because I noticed that in the past it does feel good to you. And you really like the way the hot water feels. And I know that taking off our clothes and getting into the bathroom feels really overwhelming right now, but we are practicing increasing our window of tolerance right now. This is a practice of coming home to ourselves. We can do that. You're not in trouble for not wanting to do it, you know, mm-hmm. or have some dialogue with it.
Yeah. Being compassionate to all the parts of ourselves that show up and noticing them, right? Because more than anything, we want to be witnessed, even just by ourselves. So not denying how we feel, but knowing that we can direct our attention.
Yeah. And if you don't want to do the thing that you have on your popsicle stick today, cool. Don't do that. I want you to go feel then. Go feel mm-hmm. it out, then go cry. Go move the feeling through your body in a different way. You know.
And moving a feeling doesn't have to mean moving your body. It can mean a lot of things.
No. It's, I mean, using a sensory stone and just like noticing how you feel and breathing and thinking about yourself as a plant that's feeling. You don't have to have a huge catharsis every time.
I love to rub tiger balm on my chest and breathe deeply.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. I love the oiling of the body and the listening to the music and engaging the senses. It really helps. Oh, yeah.
I got a mugwort soap from this incredible local maker who I want to give a little shout out to. She has a business called, I think it's Watto Soaps. I don't know how to say it. It's W-A-T-O. And they're all handcrafted Japanese recipes. She's mixed race and Japanese. And this mugwort soap, every time I use it, I think of when we used to go to Olympus Spa with that delicious fountain of mugwort tea that you just bathe your whole body in. Oh, I miss the spa so much and just sitting in a big group of women of all ages and sizes and bodies and soaking. Oh, I miss that.
Like a big lady soup. I agree. I mean, what? Hummus through straws and lady soups making Callie sick to her stomach. You know, I wonder if on Patreon we want to talk more about some of our spells and recipes, things that have worked for us.
Yeah.
Not for you to follow exactly, but to inspire you to maybe notice how you're already doing these little spells. You may not even notice, or how you could create some. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. I love that. We will be talking about the ritual of self-love over on Patreon. And Amber, do we have any new reviews?
You know that we do. We definitely do.
I'm so excited.
This is from Madeline Cat, and the title is, I can't even title this because ...
Oh.
Oh. 5 stars. When I was much younger, I practiced witchcraft quietly, but lapsed as I grew older and began intense therapy. Very recently, I found myself coming back to my old practice. It feels like coming home and finding this podcast was like being welcomed back. Uh-oh. I can't even begin to wordify how deeply meaningful Amber and Callie's no bullshit, mental health-based approach to witchcraft is. They are wise, funny, vulnerable, compassionate, and they call it like they see it. That's true. I may not even always agree with them. Good, that's healthy. But even when I don't, I trust their integrity 100%. I am and always have been a solitary witch, and I'm so grateful to have this coven in my pocket. Oh, cute.
Wow. I love that. I love that note on, like, I may not always agree, but I respect their integrity, like, or I trust their integrity. That is so meaningful because I know that sometimes I'm listening to, you know, my favorite podcasts or reading my favorite authors, and I'm like, I don't really vibe with that, but I still like you and I still see some value here. So it feels so good to be seen by somebody who's like, I think differently and I see and respect you. That feels so good.
I love that review, particularly for that note. Also, normalize disagreeing 2022 or whatever the fuck year this is. We all feel different? Weird. Yeah, of course we do. Like, can that be okay? Can we just like make that okay?
Yeah.
And also, I don't want acolytes.
Yeah.
I want relationships.
Yeah.
And that means that we have to agree to disagree safely. So.
Yeah. I love that. Well, if you haven't yet left us a review on Apple or Spotify, because Spotify has reviews now, please do that. Because did you know that the majority of our audience listens to our podcast on Spotify?
No, I did not.
That is a new development. So thank you, Spotify dwellers. Love having you here. Please leave us some reviews because it helps us get the word out, helps our podcast be noticed. And it helps us continue making this thing that we love so much. If you have an interest in gaining access to more of our tools, our extended cuts of our episodes, and a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, you can join our Patreon. The first tier gets you access to about a monthly extra cut and an occasional tool. The witch tier, which is the second one, gets you access to basically everything. And then there are a few higher ones for those who want to kick a few more bucks our way. But every single level means a ton to us. It actually makes us a lot more able to create this show, because that's kind of our emergency money.
It is. It's very helpful. It helped me get through taking a break from work after my mom died, in addition to donations. So thank you. And we also have this booked here. And Callie, on air, I am going to propose a plan to you. And we're just going to see how we feel about it.
Okay.
And if you hate it, I'll cut it out. So.
I rarely hate your ideas.
Thank you. I am currently reading How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan.
Mm.
Yeah, which is about psychedelics and their impact on mental health. And that's a special interest to me. And if I'm going to be consistent and show up for something, I got to like it and be interested in it. So I would love to have a maybe monthly Zoom group where if someone's reading that book, then they can join us and resonate around the concepts in that book. And if not, and they just have a interest in psychedelics, they can learn a little bit from what we're learning and maybe share with us some of their experiences.
I love that. I have also been reading, not that book, but I've been reading The Witch at the Forest's Edge and Circe and The Book of Lilith. You know, I like to bounce between things. And I've been thinking it would be fun to have the book club be kind of the exact same idea as you, like an idea sharing space. And hey, this is what I'm reading and what I'm learning. Kind of a cauldron of books.
Yeah. A cauldron of books. I've already read Circe, so maybe we should put it to vote. Do people want to do a psychedelics group? Right.
Mm.
Or do we want to investigate Circe? Either one, I would be so stoked to do. And like I said, I've already read Circe and metabolized it, and I would be really into it. So either way, maybe we'll make a little post and then people can maybe vote on Instagram or something like that.
Love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you want out of the book club, because we do love having it. We're just, inconsistent bitches.
Yeah. I'm fluid. I'm not, you know,
fluid more than inconsistent. It's good.
I'm like the sea. I'm always the same and I'm always changing. So I got to really surf, you know,
and salty.
Oh, very. Yeah.
Cool. Well, no matter what your interest is, Patreon, we got something for you. And unless you see us over there, we will see you next time when we talk about something. Haven't figured it out yet, but
we sure will. We'll talk about something. We will.
It's going to be like probably around an hour and probably fun, probably about mental health and magic, you know?
I imagine, yes.
Brooms up, witches.